So this is the our last look at Titus before we go into our Christmas series. I'll be honest, at my house we're already all Christmased out. We are all decorated, the tree is up, and so we've been ready for a while. I'm still not, you know, done all our shopping, all that kind of stuff for Christmas, but it's getting really close. I think next week, it's December, it's our Christmas party for our church. It really feels real. It's like, man, this is coming fast. Just pro tip, don't leave that shopping to the last minute. That's never good. So, you know, think about it now. There's some deals on. So just throwing that out there for you to not be rushed at the end, because I've been in that situation where you have like an hour to find something and you have no idea what you're going to pick and you're kind of just scrambling. So you got lots of time, so don't stress out about it. It's going to be good. And so last week, Pastor Mark looked at the passage in Titus reminding us of the importance of unity and the dangers of disunity. And then we had our AGM, which was awesome to be together for that. And this week we're looking at Titus chapter 2, verses 1 to 8. But we're going to split it up into two parts. And so it's going to be verses 1 to 6 first, and then 7 to 8 second. And I'm going to be reading from the Message. So if you're following along with your own Bible or on your phone, it might look a little bit different. But here is what it says. It says, "Your job is to speak out on the things that make for solid doctrine. Guide older men into the lives of temperance, dignity, and wisdom, into healthy faith, love, and endurance. Guide older women into lives of reverence so they end up as neither gossip nor drunks, but models of goodness. By looking at them, the younger women will know how to love their husbands and children and be virtuous and pure and keep a good house and be good wives. We don't want anyone looking down on God's message because of their behavior. Also, guide the young men to live disciplined lives." Have you ever heard the expression that talk is cheap? Talk is cheap. And the idea behind that is that it's like it's easy to say certain things or it's easy to talk about it, but it's harder to do. At Youth, we have this expression that we use a lot, and it's "you won't." You won't. And it's along this line of if someone says something like that could be sarcasm or could be something like they're just exaggerating or something that like you know that they won't ever do, they'd say it and you'd say like, "You won't." Like, "You won't." To give you an example, say it was after Youth and I was really hungry. I said, I'm so hungry. I'm going to get like 5 burgers at McDonald's. And then we'd be like, "You won't. You won't do it. You won't do it." And it's kind of like a little challenge. And so there's kind of 2 responses you can give to that. You can say like, "No, you're right. Like, I won't. But like, I am hungry. So like, you know, I won't." Or you can be like, "I will." So if someone says, like, I said, "I'm going to eat 5 burgers." And Keenan's like, "You won't." I'm like, "I will." And then he'd say, "Bet." And then we'd go do it. So it's kind of like this little challenge that we have back and forth. But it kind of illustrates that point of talk is cheap, right? And so that kind of comes up a lot at Youth when someone says something that, you know, most times they're clearly being like exaggerating or sarcastic. And then we would say like, "You won't, you won't." And it's kind of a challenge to them. And then sometimes they'll do it or we'll do it. Most times though, it's like, "Yeah, no, you're right, I won't." Because talk can be cheap. But the first thing that I want to say from this passage, the first point I want to share is that we need to talk the talk. We need to talk the talk. The expression that talk is cheap is only partly true. Because sometimes, if we're being honest, like to talk can actually be scary. Sometimes it's easier just to be silent, say nothing, and walk away. But to actually like speak up can be hard. And it's not just like an easy thing to do. It can be really tough. And so the idea of talk is cheap is only partly true. And Paul here is telling Christians that we actually have to talk the talk. That we have a job and a responsibility to help guide others. And it's not optional. It doesn't say, hey, like, if you feel like it or when it's convenient, guide other people. It doesn't say, hey, when you're not busy, and when the circumstances align perfectly, then go ahead and do it. It's not optional. He's saying that we have a responsibility and a job to help guide others. But the importance, though, is that we have to actually talk the talk. We can't just talk. Talking is just easy. Like, it's easiest to talk. Anyone can talk. Anyone can, this is my opinion, this is what I think, you know, this is what I feel, or this is my opinion, or this is whatever. Anyone can share that, right? Anyone can do that. They can do it with their mouth. They can do it with their fingers through a phone. It's really easy to do. You can just talk. But to actually talk the talk is different, because like I said, it's easy to talk. You can just say things and maybe not even think about how someone might take it or how it might affect someone or how it might hurt someone. It's easiest to talk. But if we're going to talk the talk, that means that we have to talk with or about the things that Paul mentions in this passage. That means we have to talk with temperance. We have to be wise with how we talk, which sometimes means not actually talking. That's the big point. Sometimes being wise in speaking is not speaking. So we have to be wise. We have to talk with faith, talk with love, with endurance, with goodness. We have to talk with those things or about those things, which is another challenge entirely. And as Christians, we have the delicate responsibility to speak the truth, but speak the truth in love. And that can be really, really hard, really difficult. How can we do that? Because doesn't that mean that sometimes if we're trying to witness to someone, don't we have to correct them? Don't we have to kind of show them this different way? Don't we have to tell them the things that maybe they shouldn't be doing? How can we do that? How can we share the truth, but share it in love? And we're going to look at that a bit later. But talking the talk is important. And why? I think verse 5 sums it up really, really good. We don't want anyone looking down on God's message because of our behavior. It's like when you're a kid and you go somewhere with your parents, they're like, don't you embarrass me. Like, I don't want people to look at me badly because of what you're doing, okay? And if they catch you doing something bad, I don't know you, okay? You're someone else's kid, okay? So just like, it's like, don't embarrass me, all right? And then when you're a teenager and you go out with your parents, you're like, don't embarrass me, okay? Don't embarrass me. My friends are here, so don't embarrass me, all right? And my mom would threaten me all the time, like, hey, do this, or I'm going to come embarrass you in front of your... And she would do it. Like, and she wouldn't have to try. She would just show up, and just by nature, I'd be embarrassed. So she would do it, right? But we do that, and we think, okay, like, hey, like, wow, like, I don't want anyone looking down on God's message because of me. And that can be, a scary thought, because I think for myself, like, there's for sure multiple times where if someone was watching me closely, what I was saying or doing, that it would be, man, that probably doesn't speak too good about God's message. Probably doesn't show too much about the good character of God by how I'm acting. But the reality is that we are ambassadors and represent God to those around us. And I'm sure a lot of us have heard people talking bad about the church or about God because of the actions of other people. Which is tough, because they're speaking bad about maybe the church or God, but their thought and their negativity comes from the actions of different people entirely. So it's hard. It's hard to hear that. And so we need to talk the talk, not so that God doesn't look bad, not just so that God doesn't look bad, but also so that we can help guide others. And I love the word that this passage used in the idea of guiding others. I've had guides in my life different times. When I was on my honeymoon in Mexico, we went to the Mayan ruins. We had a guide. If you go to a museum, sometimes you have a guide. Or if you go into a theme park, one of my favorite things is when you go through those like tours of the back lot and stuff, and they have a guide for that. But never have I heard someone say like my guide was awful. I didn't even want to go. They kidnapped me. They threw me in the truck and they just started telling me about all the facts. I was like, yeah, and I didn't even want to hear it. And then when I finally started to talk, they just argued with me the whole time. They didn't listen to me. And then they said, okay, there you go, you're done, get out. Never have I heard that from a guide. That would be a pretty bad guide, right? No one would want to listen to them. No one would want to go on anything that they had to say. Their tours would be empty. No one would sign up. And so I love the idea of, or the wording of guide, because it implies that it's a process or a journey and that it's voluntary, not forced. If you're guiding someone, you're not like forcing them. You're not like pushing them along. You're guiding them like, hey, this way, like, come on, like, you can come this way. It's a process and it's a journey. And we are to help guide because we're never actually going to control. Like, we're never going to control what someone does. We're never going to control what someone always says or what they do. If you're a parent, you know that. You know that you're never going to fully control what your kid does. If you If you're a teenager, you know that you're never going to control what your parents do. It's just the way it goes. We're never going to control. All we can do is help guide. But we need to be careful, too, because as much as we can help guide in one breath, and Mark alluded to this last week as well, as much as we can help guide in one breath, the next breath, we can say or do something that's going to completely undermine the message that we've been trying to share. So let's do our best to talk the talk, which is full of grace, love, wisdom, and goodness. And let's do our best to help guide others, because it's not optional. Number two is, we also need to walk the walk. But I'm going to read 7 to 8 of chapter 2 first. It says, mostly, and I love this. This is my favorite part of this passage. Show them all this by doing it yourself. Incorruptible in your teaching, your words solid and sane. I love that. Like, solid and sane. Don't be, crazy. Then anyone who is dead set against us, when he finds nothing weird or misguided, might eventually come around. I love how that's worded. When he finds nothing crazy or weird or misguided, they might eventually come around. I love how this is worded. Show them by doing it yourself. We need to walk the walk. When I was in college, my last 2 years, I was an RA, which is like a resident advisor. If you don't know what that is, basically it's like you're like a representative of the faculty and staff when there is no faculty and staff. So because the teachers and stuff wouldn't sleep in the dorms, we would be there to kind of keep the peace and make sure no one's breaking rules or there's anything crazy going on like when the teachers aren't there. And so part of our responsibilities would be like making sure quiet time is enforced, making sure that, people aren't doing anything really, really crazy, which does happen. Like one time, Elise was an RA and someone was trying to put a couch on a roof. And so Elise had to say, you can't do that. And they were pretty mad about it, which I don't understand why, because that's not a common thing. But that's what we would do. But part of it also was we would have to do security shifts in the office. And we'd actually get paid for it. And it was like the easiest money I've ever made. Like all you had to do was you'd show up, you'd sit down in the office, and like you didn't have any actual work to do for it. Like it wasn't like, hey, when you're there, make sure that you're like going over the, data logs or anything like that. It was literally just you show up, you're in the office, you can do whatever you want. You can play video games, you can go on the computer, you can do homework, and it's whatever you want. And you get paid. Like, it was the best. And then at once an hour, you have to do a little loop around the school to make sure that no one's doing anything bad and or that there's no couples making out where they shouldn't be making out, which happened a lot. That was my favorite thing, just to walk up and be like, I'd be really loud at first because they didn't want to see anything. And then they'd be sitting there, I'd be like, hey, guys. And they'd wave awkwardly, like, see you later. but that's what you do, right? That was basically your job. The only thing that they would say to you is, hey, when you're in the office, don't have anyone else in there with you. Like, we want to keep it, like, more professional. Because later on in the nighttime, after, like, 11:30, you would have to actually mark down who comes in. That was like, hey, your name? You write it down, that's it. Just so that they know who's coming and going type of deal. But that was it. And they said, hey, can you not have anyone in the office with you? Just because we want to be professional and that sort of thing. And I said, oh, yeah, no problem. That's easy. Like, you're going to pay me for sitting here and play video games. Like, no one else has to be in here. That's fine. But then what would happen is, like, pretty quickly, we would be walking through whatever when I wasn't on shift, and there'd be the RA in there, or even the RS, and there'd be people in the office with them. And I thought, oh, maybe it's one of those, like, rules that, like, they say, but then doesn't actually happen. Like, it's one of those things, all right, guys, make sure you do this, and then no one actually does it, and it's kind of just, like, the unspoken, like, don't even worry about it. So I thought, oh, maybe that's how it goes. But then we'd have a meeting each week, and in that meeting, it would be reinforced, hey, everyone, reminder, don't have anyone in the office with you when you're on shift. And I was like, oh, okay, this is serious. And I'm like, why is everyone doing this then? And there'd be times where I'd be in the office and my roommates would come by and I'd be like, hey, guys, you got to leave. And they're like, what? I'm like, you can't be in here. And they'd look at me like, what are you talking about? Like, you're such a stickler. I'm like, no, like, they just said it today in the meeting. Like, I shouldn't have anyone in here. And they're like, okay, fine. But then people would still do it. And I remember one time, me and my roommates were in the middle of a game. We were playing on our laptops, and I had to go to work. And so I said, okay, I got to go. And they said, okay, well, we'll come with you. I said, no, guys, you can't. Like, you can't come in the office. And they're like, are you serious? Literally everyone has people in the office. Like, everyone does it. I'm like, I know, but, like, that's the only thing they asked me to do. And I'm getting paid to do this. So, like, I don't want to, I'm not going to do it. And they're like, come on, man. I said, no, I can't do it. So they said, fine. They're stubborn like me. So they brought down like little side tables and desks, and they set up their video games in the lobby, like right outside. They're like, we're not in your office, okay? I'm like, all right, fine, whatever. We're not breaking any rules. And we would do that, and they would always give me a hard time. And then from that point on, every time we'd walk into the lobby, if there was someone in the office with the RA, they'd be like, look at that, Christian. Wow, I guess they like their friends, and they let him go in there. I said, guys, like, oh, and they would give me, for the whole year, they'd be like, look at that, like, someone's in the office, Christian. How come you can't do it? I'm like, oh my goodness, guys. Like, I'm sorry. And I get so mad because every week in these meetings, it'd be, hey guys, reminder, don't have anyone in the office. You know, we have to be, you know, set on that and da da da. And like, okay, great. And then sometimes it'd be the RSs who were like the supervisors of the RAs, also students. They'd be saying, all right, reminder, no one in the office. And I'd say, yeah, great. And then that night, they have someone in the office. I'm like, what is going on here? Like, this is brutal. Like, my friends are making fun of me now because of this. Like, this is awful. And that's a funny story, but we all hate it when someone says, like, yeah, do this, you do this, and I'm going to do it too. Then they don't actually do it, but they expect you to do it when they don't actually walk the walk. And it's super frustrating for me. It's like, hey, you said do this, but you're not doing it yourself, so why would I, like, listen? Like, why would I actually do it? So it's important to walk the walk. And so if we're going to tell someone, hey, this is how to live, this is how much Jesus loves us, and this is what he commands us to do, then we need to actually make sure that we're doing it ourselves. Otherwise, it's pointless. If our words and actions don't line up, it actually does more harm than good. And for a lot of people, words won't be enough. They actually have to see something different before they're actually going to think, okay, maybe this is for real. And like I said, I love the wording of, then anyone who is dead set against it, when they don't find something weird or misguided, might come around. And ultimately, that's the goal of Christianity, is to bring others into the family, hoping that people might eventually come around. You ever heard from someone who you didn't know that you were a Christian, and they find out and they say, like, oh, but like, you're not weird? Or like, but you're normal though. Like, and it's kind of funny, but it's because their idea of what a Christian is so different that when they meet someone who's like them and believes this, they're like, oh, but oh, okay, that's interesting. Like, I didn't know that. There's a great saying as well that goes like this: people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And the idea behind that is you can talk to your blue in the face, tell them this, tell them that, but if they think that you don't care about them, they're probably not going to care. But if you care about them and show love to them and are actually there for them, they are probably going to care a lot more what you have to say. And so the idea behind walking the walk is that we need to actually, we're going to talk about it, but we need to live it out as well, so that when they see us, they're not going to be like, okay, like, this doesn't seem weird. They don't seem crazy. Like, maybe I'll ask some questions about this. Maybe I'm curious about this. And we can't just talk about it. We can't just talk about being wise and having faith and showing love and goodness. We have to actually act that way. We have to act wise. We can't say, hey, be really wise with how you speak and what you do, and then us go do things that aren't wise. We can't say, hey, you need to show love to others, but then we don't show love. We can't say, hey, like, be kind, be good, you know, have grace, and then for us, don't actually do any of that ourselves. We have to actually follow through and walk the walk. And this can be a hard thing to do, and it can seem impossible. Like, okay, well, I can't always follow through with what I say. But the good thing about that is that when we actually fail, when we don't actually live up to what we're trying to live up to, all that actually does is reinforce the idea of God's grace and God's love. So if someone tells us, oh, well, you did this, though, you say, I know, and God still loves me. Isn't that awesome? So, like, you can make mistakes, too, and that's okay. God still loves you. God still has grace for you. It actually just reinforces our message. And the last thing that I want to take from this passage, and probably the biggest thing, is that it's better for us to be known what we stand for rather than what we stand against. It's better for us to be known what we stand for rather than what we stand against. I mentioned earlier about the challenge of speaking the truth in love. Like, how can we do that? Where's that balance? Where's that line? Like, how do we do that well? And it's a delicate balance. And I think verse 1 speaks out on this pretty pretty clearly. I think I have it here quoted. Yeah, it says, speak out on the things that make for solid doctrine. Speak out on the things that make for solid doctrine. Notice that it doesn't say, like, speak out against everything that you think is wrong. Speak out against anything you disagree with. Speak out against anyone whose opinion is different than yours. It doesn't say that. It says, speak out on things that make for solid doctrine. Speak out on good things. And I think it's important for us to remember that. I think it's important for us as believers to be known more for the things that we stand for rather than the things that we stand against. Most of you would know that I am not a fan of the Canucks. Most of you would know that. If you don't know that, I don't like the Canucks. I'm sorry to say. What's funny is that I grew up in Ontario, and when I came to school in Abbotsford, I actually didn't mind the Canucks. A lot of you would know this. I didn't mind them. I kind of liked them. And then I don't know why it was like this, but I would show up and they'd say, oh, where are you from? I'd say, oh, I'm from Ontario. And I'm like new at school and I'm excited. I'm like, Ontario? Leafs suck. Like, what? Like, okay. Like, yeah, Leafs suck. Go Canucks. I'm like, all right. Like, sounds good. Like, I didn't say anything about hockey, but that's fine. And that was what it was. And then it would be like, literally like professors would be in like orientation, would be saying like, I know a lot of you are from Ontario, but just know that the Leafs suck and go Canucks. I'm like, what? Like, what are you saying to me? Like, how can you, like, okay. And it got to the point where I was like, you know what? I hate the Canucks. Like, I don't want the Canucks to win and I want anyone else to win. And it honestly got to the point where I just like would want to watch hockey to see the Canucks lose. That's what all it was. Like, I wasn't even really cheering for anyone at this time. Like, I always loved the Leafs, and I still do. But at that, like, season of my life, it was more about, I want the Canucks to lose. That is all I want. I want the Canucks to lose. I wanted the Canucks to lose more than I wanted the Leafs to win. That's all I, like, if I could choose, okay, Leafs could win, and the Canucks could win, I'd be like, you know what, I'll trade that Leafs win for Canucks loss. Because that's more fun to me right now. Because everyone was just so in my face about it. I was so against it. And then eventually, as time went on, actually the biggest thing was the Canucks turned out to be really bad for a while. So I was like, okay, well, I kind of feel bad for them now. Like, it's, you know, and people weren't in my face about it as much. And so I kind of let it go. But actually that wasn't the best way to watch hockey because I was never really happy. I was like, oh, Canucks lost. Awesome. But like if another team won, I wasn't actually like happy for them. It wasn't like, oh, my team won. That's great. It was more like, yes, Canucks lost. Awesome. That's the best. That's how I would watch hockey. And so it's a funny example, but it's kind of a similar idea with us. Like, I'd rather be known as someone who's like, yeah, I'm for this, not just against this. And it's actually more enjoyable for me to watch hockey now and be like, I still don't like the Canucks. I'm still like kind of laugh if they lose, but I would rather the Leafs win. I'd rather my team win. And for us, it's important for us to know or be known for what we stand for rather than what we stand against. And here's why, because I would guess that if you ask the average non-Christian, hey, like, what is a Christian? Like, what do they do? I bet that most of their answers would be this. Well, Christians don't do this, and Christians don't do that, and they don't believe this, and they're against that, and they don't do that, and they don't say that, and they don't do this. That would be probably most people's answers. That would be honestly my answer when I was younger, and I wouldn't even mean it in a bad way. Like, when I was younger and someone said, oh, you're a Christian, I'd say, yes, like, my name is Christian and I'm a Christian, like, I know, crazy. I would say, like, yeah, I'm a Christian. Say, oh, what does that mean? I'd be like, oh, well, I go to church and, you know, I don't swear and I don't go to, like, parties and I don't try to not do bad things and I don't lie. And I didn't mean it as a bad way, but that's kind of how I viewed it, was like, okay, like, Christianity is don't do this and I'm good. But that's not what it is. That's not what it is. And I think, to a certain degree, we have failed in that regard. Because wouldn't you rather be known as, oh, what is a Christian? Oh, a Christian? Oh, they help those in need. Like, they're generous. They serve their community. They're kind. They're good neighbors. They're full of grace. Like, I'd rather be known as that, as opposed to, I don't do this, 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 this. I'm against this. Because many Christians are those things and do amazing things. That's true. I'm not saying that, like, we don't do that. But we have to be... I'd rather be known by that. And I'm not saying that we should never disagree with someone, that we should always just go along with what everyone says because we don't want to step on toes. I'm not saying that we don't stand up against injustice or things like that. There comes a time when we have to stand up for certain things, of course. But here's the kicker. If the only time people would hear from us as Christians or the church is when we have things to complain about, why would they ever listen? If the only time people hear from the church or us as Christians is when we have something to complain about, why would they ever want to listen? It's important for us to be known what we stand for. And if we're more invested in the things that we are against than the things that we are for, it doesn't actually show the true appeal of Jesus. Because here's the truth. A life with Jesus is better than a life without him. That's the truth. A life with Jesus is better than a life without him. A life with Jesus is full of purpose, grace, love, mercy, community. It's better than a life without him. And we need to remember that. As a youth pastor, I joke that like half my job is convincing people to come to things. That's like half my job is, hey, I think I've gotten pretty good at it. Like if someone says, I don't know if I'm coming. Oh, you got to come. It's going to be so fun. I'm not just like selling it. I believe it. Like I want them there. It's going to be good. Keenan knows. I do it to him all every week. That's half my job is convincing people to come to things. But one strategy I've never tried is telling students all the things that they can't do and then say, how does that sound? Come on, it's going to be fun. I've never done that. I've never said, hey, you should come to the fall retreat. What are we going to do? Well, you're going to listen to me. You're not going to be loud. You're not going to talk over me. You're going to go to bed when I say. If you're a guy, you're not going to go in a girl's cabin. And you're going to play all the games. You're not going to be late. And you're not going to fall asleep during the messages. Sound fun? And be like, oh, yeah, sounds great. I'll be there. Like, they're not going to come. They're not going to come. I've never tried. Maybe I should try it because I've tried everything. But I highly doubt that's going to work. I'm not going to sell someone by saying, hey, don't do this, 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 this. We'll see you there. Like, it's not going to work. Instead, I'd say, hey, you should come to fall retreat. It's going to be so fun. We play these fun games as prizes. We have awesome services. We do night games. We're going to do, like, we have cabins that are super fun. Court. Yeah, we do court. I sell it to them that way. And of course, it's not like there isn't rules. Like when they sign up, there's things that, you know, they have to say that I'm going to agree to. And when we first meet, I go over the rules for the weekend. Like we still have that in place. But that's not what I'm going to be like shouting from the mountaintops is, hey, make sure this, 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 and we'll see you there. Like that's not going to work. That's not appealing to someone. We still have those things in place. Otherwise, it'd be chaos. But that's not how I sell it. So I think it's important for us to try to be known for the things that we're for rather than the things that we're against. I think that's going to make more of a difference in people's lives if we try to do that. Because what we're for are some awesome things. We're for, as Elise was saying earlier, we're for generosity. We're for kindness, we're for serving others, we're for love, we're for goodness. It's a lot of awesome, awesome things that we're for. And that can really make an impact. And it's really appealing to people. When someone meets someone who does those things, that you want to be around them. It's encouraging to be around them. So, the big things I want us to take away from this passage today before we leave is, let's remember that we have to talk the talk. It's not optional. But we're guiding, we're not controlling. We're not forcing it down someone. We're, hey, this is the way to go. If you want to come, this is, you know, I'm going, you can come with me. Let's talk the talk, let's walk the walk. Let's make sure that we actually do what we're saying as much as we can. And then let's be known for the things that we're for rather than the things that we're against. Because a life with Jesus is better, and we need to remember that. I think sometimes we can forget that. Like we're trying to, like, convince someone and say, hey, this is actually better. Like, this is better for you if you want to do this. This life is more full if you want to do this. Let me pray.